This podcast is brought to you with limited interruption by Rudy Luther Toyota. Whether looking for an exciting brand new Toyota, a certified pre-owned vehicle, or getting quality routine maintenance and service for your vehicle, Rudy Luther Toyota is the place to go. Rudy Luther Toyota, the southeast corner of 394 and 169 in Golden Valley. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show for your Monday. Good to be with you today. Matt and Brett here today. Hello, Brett. How are we, my friend?
Hey, doing good. How about you?
All right. Did you have... I got to imagine that's a tough weekend for you because it is literally like the worst sports weekend in America if you're a big sports fan, and you're a big sports fan. No NHL. You had an NHL All-Star game. Yawn. No NFL. You had the NFL Pro Bowl. Yawn. You had a few basketball games. Our basketball teams in this town, college basketball teams, are atrocious. Gopher hockey was off this weekend. I mean, there wasn't a lot of positive. This, if you were a sports fan, did you read a book? Did you go out and do anything else this weekend?
Well, there, Brent? Pretty much the entire Saturday, I was out streaming events, since at the high school level they are still playing, taking advantage of, you said, of kind of that dead zone, I guess, when all pro sports are off. Don't we have a day like that during the summer too, like in July?
Oh, the All-Star game. Yeah, the All-Star game.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. Yeah, it's tough. And I mean, Major League Soccer tries to fill in that role, and they do okay. But it's just, I mean, I love Minnesota United. I can't get excited about, like, Real Salt Lake versus the New England Revolution. I could care less about either one of those teams. So, yeah, no, it's a little weak out there, although it's going to be a big week here with the Super Bowl coming in this weekend. We'll get to that, obviously, a little bit later on. I did get on over. I don't know. So I saw the story about the ice flower artist Andrew Bentley and his crew that were going to do a bunch of ice flowers over the MIA. And I actually got to meet the artist, Andrew Bentley, over at the MIA. I went over there on Saturday because I was looking at the weather forecast. It definitely is warmer right now than we've been in a while here. I think we're, 35 degrees, some light rain in the metro area. So, yeah, it's not exactly the, basically, as a matter of fact, we're getting some snow and rain appearing because I think basically because things are melting because it's 35, there's so much moisture going into the air. But the... You know, it's been 35. I said, well, if you put out ice sculptures for the Winter Carnival, if you got snow sculptures, they're all going to disappear once it starts getting like this. So we went over on Saturday and caught the ice and bloom display, got to meet the artist who himself had said he and his crew saw the weather coming down the line, and he called up the MIA and said, if you guys want to do this, we have to do it this week. So in 1 week, they put together all these very creative ice flowers that were out there. That was lovely. Had a very nice time doing that. It's cool, man. We do a lot of it. We embrace winter here, and we're not afraid of it. And some very cool things. I do have some pictures of that. If you go to the social media pages, the Twitter feed is at Matt McNeil Show. Facebook page is Matt McNeil Show / Progressive Citizen X. And I believe I'm even on Mastodon. I'm over there with the Matt McNeil Show on Dast. I think I'm on Party Social over there. So find me, follow me, enjoy the photos, and do these things and enjoy this here. So there is one thing, if I can say, I want to give credit to my SLL and my BIL, my sister-in-law and my brother-in-law, who are currently in Africa. And I think it was on Saturday they summited Mount Kilimanjaro. That is 19,000. Is it? I think it's 19,000 feet. I'll tell you for sure here. Brett, what's the highest mountain you've ever been on? Do you remember off the top of your head?
Not that high. That's for sure. No, I haven't done any real mountain climbing myself. In terms of like what I've visited. Oh, I don't know. I'm trying to think. Been to Colorado a few times, so probably somewhere out there, obviously.
Well, and I am wearing right now my Rocky Mountain National t-shirt, where it's literally the tallest road in the country. you go up 12,183 feet to the top of the mountains up there in the Rocky Mountain National Park. And as a matter of fact, I will say I got out at one point and hiked even higher. You could do this. And it was amazing how you could feel it. I mean, at 12,000 feet, I mean, you could feel the definitive difference in hiking up, you know, just on a lake here in Minnesota versus there. And we just had to go basically like a mile and a half up this hill to these, you know, very cool, hoodoos, these rock formations they have out of them. If you think about Bryce Canyon, there's tons of hoodoos down in Bryce Canyon where they're kind of the rock gets eroded and these kind of towers exist out there. They had some on the top of this mountain at Rocky Mountain National. And it was, so we decided to hike on up there. I was having a hard time. That's 12,000. You know, Kilimanjaro indeed is 19,341 feet. Now, the first thing I will say about seeing some of the photos here of going up that hill, you look at these mountains from a distance and they look so easy. They do. You know, you look up there, that doesn't look that hard. And then all of a sudden you see the close-up version, and you're like, that's actually, it's not exactly Everest where you're, you know, climbing straight up, you know, cliffs and stuff like that. But it is a pretty strenuous hike uphill for hours, which no, I mean, I don't like it when I have to go up. I mean, there is a serious internal debate I have. It's like two flights of stairs, two. And the elevator is slow, you say? Oh, come on, man. I'll take the elevator. Or how much? The natural instinct of every human being when you go to an up escalator and you realize, oh, it's not working. I have to use these as stairs. The frustration we all have. For God's sakes, you want me to use my legs? God. Yeah, same thing. They apparently did well. Jill and Kurt, my brother-in-law and sister-in-law, they did very well out there. Got to the top of Kilimanjaro. And, you know, it wonderful things. This is not taken away from anything there. I'm sorry. I have zero interest in really climbing. Don't get me wrong. I had a great time out in Rocky Mountain National. It was a lot of fun going to the top of those mountains. It really was. And it was beautiful and it was scenic and I highly recommend it. And not just there. I mean, I was out at the parks of Utah and Arizona, which, by the way, if you got the thank you gift of the AM950 National Parks poster, you got to see a lot of those photos. You're up pretty high on a lot of those areas, too. I mean, that you're up there. And that is, it is amazing to be there. But the idea of, okay, I'm going to get some really good hiking shoes, throw a backpack on my back and climb up. That is not on my bucket list. That is just, and I get it. There are people out there like, Matt, you know, come on, man. We had Robbie Massey on. He was the mountain climber who was on Everest when they had the earthquake out there. And he ended up surviving, coming back. This is a guy that would climb like mountains in the United States up to 20,000 feet, the ones in Alaska. And he would go up there and then ski down them. So he's carrying skis up the thing. My God. They're like this. That's a lot of work. It's a, you know, got your personal goal. It's a lot of work for a really cool selfie. And the views I imagine are spectacular, but at the same time, I mean, Brett, how about you? I mean, you know, if you could, you know, climb a mountain, is that anywhere on your bucket list of things to do?
Not particularly. No, it's not on my bucket list. I have to admit, no.
Well, I was thinking if I was going to do it, doing one on the tropic, in the center part of the globe, I don't want to go up in the mountains where I've got 20,000 feet of snow I got to climb. I mean, I don't like having to go down a slightly icy driveway. I don't like that. I am amazed by it. I get it. It's really, you know, I mean, if you're the first person that got up there, you know, minus the Sherpas who basically, same day, different story. Oh, the white guy wants to go up. Sure. Okay, fine. Yeah. You got here first, guy. No, no problem. If you're up there first, you're exploring for exploring's sake. I can understand that appeal. I think maybe it was, what was the movie about Mount Everest? Or it was a movie and it was a book about Mount Everest. Do you remember that one that was, it was talking about how the people, you know, people dying up there and they had to rescue the people up that way?
I know there is the movie called Everest from 2015. That's probably not the one you're talking about.
Well, it could have been. Could have been, yeah. Based on that one. But the Everest, you know, it's, I think it was when I read that book that when you see that book and you realize the film or the people that are going up to the top of that are really taking their lives in their own hands. And now you get these people, this tourism industry, where they're talking about in the book that how they basically had to carry the Sherpas had to, but then there are these people that do have this kind of bucket list thing that I want to climb Everest, who just have not put in the time or effort needed, years of mountain climbing, higher peaks, you know, experience in different conditions, that sort of thing, to do it. And they're in the into thin air. They were talking about how they're, you know, having to carry these wealthy people that just wanted a photo op on the top of the mountain all the way up the mountain and carry them down. And they're acting like, see, I climbed it. Well, no, you didn't really climb it. You basically were carried up there. And I guess maybe that made me a little more cynical of it, because I appreciate the amount of effort that's there. I mean, my brother-in-law and sister-in-law, they're very physically fit. They're very physically fit. I don't know exactly how they trained in Minnesota for Kilimanjaro. It's just, you know, Duluth is not quite there yet. You know, you can go, you get, well, I mean, well, maybe I shouldn't be. So what do you think, what's the height do you think you go from the Lake Superior? If I was down at the lift bridge in Duluth and I was to hike all the way up to the top of the hill here, how many feet do you think that would be? 2,000?
That's tough to say. I would have to go, yeah, maybe around 1,500, 2,000, yeah.
Yeah, that's a pretty good hike uphill. And so maybe you could do that and kind of get your calves ready to go for it. But I just, there are certain things. I don't necessarily want to go into a bathysphere down to 1,000 feet below the water level. Ugh, no, I'm good. Surfing looks fun. I'm 54 years old. It's not on my old bucket list there. There are some things I do want to do. I mean, I wouldn't mind. I do want to go to Madagascar. That sounds like the wildest. That just sounded like such a wild place. Just what a unique culture, a unique environment. I'd love to go there. I'd love to go to New Zealand. Love to go to Australia. I would love to. I would love to do a food tour of South Korea. And not North Korea. North Korea food tours, not nearly as exciting as you think they'd be. South Korea and Japan street food tour. Holy God. Yes. Yes. All over that action. 100%. So maybe that's what it is. I'm not looking to accomplish, what would be the right term, you know, feats. I'm looking for experiences. Would that be the right way to say it? I'm not looking for to accomplish feats on my bucket experience. I'm looking for experiences.
Yeah, well, you're kind of asking, do you want a trophy for what you're doing? Because if you're going for a feat, I mean, that's something where, you know, you're going to display that. I mean, I don't blame anyone for doing that. It's just a different mindset when you're going out and doing those types of activities.
The only place I could think of where maybe a feat would be there, I wouldn't mind going to Antarctica. I had a friend of mine who years ago, and I had no idea about this. He had gotten a job, one of those jobs on one of the internal camps on Antarctica. And he basically, he was, you know, fixing cars or not cars out there, but engines. He was an engine repair guy. And he was very good at it. He had to go through a process and they shipped him down. He was there for a year, on and off for a year, I think it was. And, you know, basically went down there and worked And he said it was very exciting. It was very interesting. You got to see a lot of people doing a lot of interesting work. But at the end of the day, it kind of got boring. And he just said, you know what? You're not going out and exploring because you'll die real quick. But it is kind of one of those things where it is kind of an interesting life that they've set up for people down there. So I wouldn't mind going to that, but I'm not jumping on the sled dog team and racing for the South Pole. I would like to go. I've heard that river fishing up in the very northern parts of Canada, because like the rivers are only unfrozen for like a month and a half every year. That is an amazing experience. That the fish are just bite like crazy. A lot of bugs. But it's just an experience that people have to experience. That's the kind of thing I would love to do something like that. I would love to. Is there one on your list that is just, you know what, if I could do this, I want to do this?
Probably for me, I would have to say going to Australia. I was there as a newborn, so I obviously remember nothing about it, but that's one area I'd really like to visit.
Why were you there as a newborn? Can I ask?
Not necessarily a newborn. I was probably like 6, 8 months old, but yeah, that's when the parents had the vacation scheduled, so... That's one area, and then Alaska as well. I'd love to go up there, even during the wintertime. I think that'd be kind of cool to, you know, just be out there in the wilderness.
One thing, if I can give some advice to you on Alaska, my dad was able to go to Alaska when he hit 80, that we don't realize that travel in the United States is really accessible, really easy. I talked about it with the national parks and how accessible the national parks were. They're just amazing on that level. If you want to do something, I mean, there are some places that it's not nearly as accessible. I'm not talking about climbing Kilimanjaro, but it's not like the United States, where there is kind of a society built on accessibility and, you know, getting around to a point, especially in tourism areas. So you can save Alaska till later on in your life, and you'll be able to do that. Try to do the stuff that is in areas where it's not as easy to get around, or it's a little more complicated now, because that it wouldn't be possible for my dad would have never made it down to Australia when he got later on in life. So one bit of advice for you on that. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Dr. Joe's going to join us here. Our COVID update from him. He's a little hot. I'm going to say it. He's a little hot right now. We'll get to him coming up in a little bit. But first, chicken time. When we do return, it is the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota, the Matt McNeil Show. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. Breaking news, charges Minnesota woman assaulted boyfriend with whole chicken. Now, it wasn't just a white meat, dark meat sort of thing. It was the whole thing. apparently, the woman has pending charges against her for a previous domestic assault. You don't say. A southern Minnesota woman is facing jail time for allegedly attacking her boyfriend with an unusual weapon, poultry. Natalie Broomer, a 36-year-old Eagle Lake resident, was arrested Wednesday after coming home from a bar with the victim, according to charges in Brown County this week. So I am presuming alcohol was involved. The unidentified victim told police that Broomer was hitting him and spitting in his face on the drive home. Okay, at that point, shouldn't you be pulling over saying, you can get out, and I will, yeah, apparently not. Once inside the property, he hit him in the back of the head with a whole chicken. Was it cooked? Apparently, I'm guessing it was, because victim still had some chicken residue in his hair. Broomer became aggressive towards the officer and resisted arrest, but calmed down after they escorted her outside. I'm thinking alcohol. You are an angry drunk. Okay. There's a lot of signs here. You're an angry drunk. You are hitting and spitting in his face on the drive home, and then you beamed him with a turkey or chicken. And what are you doing with the chicken, man? I'm getting rotisserie chicken. That's some good eating right there. Broomer was arrested, has been pending assault charges against the same victim, dating back to December 2021, when charges noting the couple had been together for more than 11 years. In the latest incident, wow. Maybe that's how they feed each other. I don't. And here's the pitch. It's just outside. Oh, God. In the latest incident, Broomer was charged with one count of misdemeanor domestic assault and one misdemeanor count of interfering with a peace officer. Undoubtedly. And basically ruining a perfectly good chicken, if I can say. I mean, it's beating someone. I mean, I don't think you can, unless the guy catches it after he hits it in the back of the head, that's on the floor. Come on. It's no way to respect the chicken. I have my own case where I threw food. I this was not some sort of hijinks as a child in a lunchroom or something like this. I have thrown a taco at someone, and not a soft shell, no, hard shell taco. Not, and it was not Brett or Patrick.
Was it Stein?
No, no, it wasn't chicken. It wasn't a taco for him. No, I have never thrown a food item at Stein. It was my sister. Because, you know, when you get to a point, you know, okay, now I want to make sure I preface this by saying I was like 7 or 8 years old. And I was, my sister, as once again, family dynamics are a delightful thing. And we were fighting, kind of normal. And I basically threatened to throw a taco at her. And she said, "You won't dare do that." Got her right between the freaking eyes, too. Right there. Taco flat in there. Nicely done. That was the end of my pitching career. My mom, who was seriously not trying to laugh as she scolded me, did scold me pretty hard on that one. And my sister was fairly distraught over by the taco drive by. But yeah, don't taunt me. I will take delicious food and throw it if I have to. Well, when I was 8, which should be maybe this is the lesson here I want to get to. I'll admit to doing this because I was 8 years old. Even I think there is, was I ever in a food fight? Like the school lunchroom or the college lunchroom or the military lunchroom and food? No. Well, not in the military, because no one in the military wants to waste their food. No. You got a tray of food, you're eating it. So no, it was never in the military. I don't think I ever was part of food shenanigans in the school lunchroom. I mean, there were some things where I got a pie in the face one time. I think it was, kind of a bit or something like that we did one time. But no, as far as actual throwing food, my extensiveness was when I was 8 years old, okay? 8, not 36. So, yeah, I don't know what has to happen here with the case of Broomer. Maybe you're not with the right guy after 11 years. Maybe that's what's going on here. Maybe you've got some unresolved anger issues. You might want to seek a counselor. If I may make the suggestion, you might want to cut back on the booze if that's a problem, because it sure seems like you're the angry drunk type, and that never goes really well. But come on, man, respect. Have you ever had, do you like, I love that rotisserie chicken you can get at the grocery store. Brett, have you ever had one of those suckers?
I haven't used it as a weapon, but I've certainly.
No, they're in a fix. Yeah. I would hope not. I would hope not. You come home from the grocery store. Hey, where are all the groceries? You're not going to believe what happened again. You know, I had Bisquick, had to use that. I would hope that's not the case. I mean, isn't that how the Last of Us got started? Enjoy your chicken. And you can shred that chicken meat and use it in a thousand. Do not throw the chicken at someone's head. I guess that's at the end of the day, unless you're 8 and your sister's really kind of torquing you off. But no, even then, I actually have to put out this. Kids, 8-year-olds who are listening to me, do not throw food at your siblings. Ever. God, I can't wait for that letter to come my way. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Oh, old El Paso vengeance, if you ask me. We'll take a break. Come on back, Dr. Joe, when we do return. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. Hey, you got to give me a fight. Can't you just let it be? AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. Our COVID expert is Dr. Joe Eastman. He has worked with NASA. He's worked with the LTER. He's worked with Colorado State University. He's currently part of the University of Texas Austin COVID modeling team, living up in Grand Rapids up in the Northlands. And he's kind enough today to join us to talk a little bit about where things are at with COVID in this day and age. Hi, Dr. Joe. How are you?
Hi. I'm still trying to figure that one out. I'm doing great, but I'll get better.
Well, you have not been, I got to be honest with you, you have not been, the happiest, guy lately. You're kind of frustrated with how things are going, especially on the federal government level in regards to COVID, right?
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. I feel like throwing my arms up at this point. We're facing a really big catastrophic situation if we don't get our act together soon, and the details are probably too complex for your listeners. But I'm not too happy right now.
Well, but you see, this is the reason why I have you on is because yes, this is complex, but the reality is that we are. What we've done is we have taken a lack of testing and a lack of positive tests henceforth because we've not had a lot of testing. And we have basically equated that to, pandemic over. And as you have said, it's not, first of all, we're just not tracking it like we should be. We're not testing anymore. No one's really doing any tests, and the at-home tests you have are relatively inaccurate, so you don't really know who's got it at what point. And you do have these new variants that keep evolving. And as you, if you put out with your last post here on the 5th, that you basically, this is going to get bad again.
You're right. The latest model predictions, they don't look so bad like my previous January surges in that sense. But my gosh, every time we have one of these surges, we're losing more and more of the workforce. There's more mutations going on, and we just have more people suffering. And at some point, we got to face this crisis head on, we are literally one mutation away from a super, super COVID variant that could really be a serious threat to humanity in a sense. I don't know how else to say it at this point.
You're currently tracking the XBB.1.5. This is the latest variant. It's one that's been hitting the East Coast. You're expecting, I was looking at your maps, you're expecting a pretty decent-sized flare-up of XBB.1.5 cases over the next 3 months, correct?
That is correct. Minnesota will be kicking in here in about, probably 2 weeks. The model says, and then it will quickly wane here in Minnesota, but there's other parts of the country where the XB.1.5 virus is still like maybe 30% of the total variant pool out there, and BQ.1 is still dominating in these places. So once it really starts kicking in these other areas, you're just going to see a kind of a flat line almost of cases nationally as all these different parts add up and create what looks like a flat line. But locally, it's a crisis on a local level that's going to happen. And our hospitals have had enough. And I hope it's wrong, but the model hasn't been wrong to this point, and I have no reason not to take some guidance from it.
Okay, let's talk about a few different things. First of all, in regards to you saying, well, Minnesota's probably not going to be as bad, is that weather-related? Because, once again, we are not in a, you know, warm weather climate, so is, you know, if we're out a little bit, is that what it is? Is this something that's going to be affecting southern states more than northern states?
It's hard to explain. I'll put it this way: our COVID state, as I call it, is a COVID state is kind of comprised of, you know, how many people have been vaccinated, infected, what your mitigation policy is, et cetera, et cetera. And Minnesota has been fairly decent at that. So we're kind of at a point right now where we're well braced for what's coming with XB5. But beyond that, I have no qualms about saying it's going to get worse after the once we get another variant that's like the XB15. We could be in serious trouble, you know. And the other areas, they're just starting to gain traction. And you'll see Texas is right now going through a pretty good one. And I don't know if you looked at the animation, but there's going to last a long time. And they're going to peak at around 1,000 cases per square kilometer in some urban areas. So, I mean, we're starting to approach numbers like we saw with the original Omicron, which is down to less than 1% across the whole country now, by the way.
So when you're talking about that, if we can, when you're talking about a surge, let's talk about Minnesota. You're talking about a surge here. How many you put out there, you know, you're talking about Texas, 1,000 cases per kilometer or something like that. What's a relatable number that you could give for Minnesota in that, and when you see it at the XBB15, when that's at its worst, what do you anticipate? What are the numbers showing you?
I believe Minneapolis, St. Paul will, the model says around 600 per square kilometer, and right in the densest part of the Minneapolis, St. Paul urban area. It quickly wanes because, you know, we build, that's what we're going through. We keep building up natural immunity, but we're finding that the natural immunity is wearing off really quickly with each passing variant. So we're heading to the point where I know people that have been 3 weeks removed from a booster that have gotten infected again already. So, or they've had the COVID in the last couple of weeks and they got infected again. So each time you do that, you're rolling the dice for long COVID. I'll put it that way.
Well, and you just sort of said your first statement was on natural immunity. So that's someone who gets it and then basically has the immunity for a while. Are you seeing a longer success ratio for vaccines or the long immunity at this point? Or are they both kind of, as you kind of implied there at the end, both of them are starting to show real strains?
Yes, you're correct. They are both, both. You know, all this stuff is based on, in terms of the vaccine, on the BA5, it was the bivalent booster, and that's almost gone. About the only thing the boosters are doing now is helping you in case you do get infected, have a bad outcome. So in the natural immunity sense, these buggers have evolved so well that they know how to just reinfect. Even our natural immunity is not preventing these guys from reinfecting you. And the other problem is, they're getting deep into the tissue of our internal organs, and it's really getting tough to dislodge them from infecting you. And eventually, you're going to see lots more, probably heart attacks, which are an excess death of COVID that aren't really being accounted for as well as they should, because all of a sudden you're producing all kinds of clots because the immune system is working in that direction. So, it's not a good trajectory around at the moment.
And one of the things that you have said before, and this is something you've seen with the research with long COVID, it will get into these organs and it dramatically compromises organs across the body to where you basically end up having, you know, it does damage, and it's taking years off people's lives. Even if they recover eventually here, it's the damage is long term for a lot of people.
You're absolutely correct, and that's the thing that we got to account for. Is you're not going to see this big immediate response in terms of deaths and things like that. But as we look at the long haul and all the people that have had their internal organs ravaged by this thing, and even in mild infection cases, it's just going to keep accumulating, and we're going to lose more of our workforce and see more really bad outcomes down the road, you know, not just within a month or two, but we're talking years down the road. Mm-hmm. So, we got to get our act together very soon.
Dr. Joe Eastman is joining us here. Dr. Joe, I'm going to be remiss here. I know you, I've gotten to know you over the years here. Have you seen something that is scaring you? In the sense, the reason I ask this is this. You seem to really be on edge about the next variants. So are you starting to see new variants that are coming in that you're like, okay, this is everything bad we were not expecting? Is there something that you're seeing? I mean, your numbers alone are stark, but is there anything else that's a little bit more ominous that you're saying, you know, this is not good?
Yeah. First up is our whole vaccines and the tools we got in our tests for treatment are pretty much worthless. And when they say keep boosting, maybe get one more bivalent booster, but please stop after that, because what you're doing is you're teaching your immune system to kind of look out for these variants and not, properly react to the new variants that are coming along. So you're basically kind of congesting down your immune system, so it's not rapidly responding to the new variants that are coming in and infecting people. Your immune system learns. I mean, it has a memory, and it builds up over time. And by repeating the old vaccines and eventually the bivalent, which I think is pretty much done with now too, we're going to reach a point where we're going to do more harm than benefit from this without coming up with new vaccines. And you got Pfizer and Moderna with, you know, $10 billion in profits, and they're not reinvesting any of that money into new research for the next generation of vaccines or anything like that. And that is really concerning me. And the other thing is, everybody's got this kind of attitude right now where, everything's cool, we're okay, and we'll just go about our life. And in the meantime, we keep, you know, incubating more and mutating more. I'm not saying it's going to come, you know, this year or next year or maybe in the next decade, but eventually this thing is going to figure out the nastiest possible way to infect human beings through some kind of mutation, like XBB.1.5 went through when it basically combined two separate lines of COVID variants into one and kind of produced the worst possible variant you could imagine at the time. So that's the direction we're heading, and that's why I am getting very concerned about the lackadaisical effort by our government. And God bless the president, but this May 11th thing, I that was like the last straw for me right now.
And what was the May 11th thing?
With him declaring the emergency over. That's kind of his target date for declaring the COVID emergency protocols over. People will have to pay for what I think are getting to be useless vaccines. $110 a shot to Moderna, you know, for something that's not effective anymore. There's all kinds of different aspects of what happens when you say, okay, it's no longer an emergency. We can go back to regular life, and it's not going to spur any more research for the new cutting edge vaccines and therapeutics. I mean, my gosh, we need more therapeutics. We have no tools in our chest right now. So I hate to be grim, but I'm just saying what I believe. And I just saw Dr. Feigelding interviewed on Tom Hartman, and he's echoing the same sentiment that I just expounded just now. So, it's tough. But I won't stop. I'll keep going, but I'm reaching a frustration.
Well, and understandably, when does it, I mean, is there a delineation point by sciences matters, medicines matters, that they say it goes from a pandemical problem to just an annual thing like the flu? Is there an infection rate? Is there, a death rate or something of that nature, that's where the delineation point is?
But we're probably talking, we'll be dead and buried before that happens. Put it that way. It's a long thing. I mean, about a month or so ago, think of COVID as an infant right now, and influenza. That's the growing up adult that's still going on and still producing, but it's not producing mutations even close to the rate that this COVID virus is reproducing right now in terms of mutations and new variants. So it's going to spiral out of control if we don't address it. And the sooner the better.
Dr. Joe Eastman once again joining us. Dr. Joe, you give out good advice here. So once again, what's the advice you're giving everyone to help still get through this?
And right now, your best defense is masks, avoid big crowds, the basics right now, because our medicinal tools are pretty much ineffective at the moment, and we're kind of left out there dry, and especially the immune-suppressed people, they don't even have a heavy shield anymore, and it's sad to see that it's coming to this point, and that is my best advice right now. Mask up and wear a good mask. And limit your social contacts, and distancing. Even the schools haven't retrofitted their HVAC system the way they should be right now. I mean, we're sending kids into that environment. Come on, please, America, wake up.
America, you're making Dr. Joe angry, and we don't want to do that. Dr. Joe is a good man who's doing a lot of good work here. But I will say, I'm the same with you. The way that our society looks at, the people who are dying are just old people. Come on, man. First of all, the greatest generation doesn't deserve to go out like this, nor the baby boomers for that matter. And the reality is, I hope I never get that callous to where I say 30 or so elderly people dying in each week is no big deal. I really, and me personally, I don't think that's a good sign of humanity, if you ask me personally.
We all love you, Matt.
I love you, man. I'm going to make sure I get your link out to your blog. Everyone read this. It's keep up to date with it. Follow his blog. Keep up to date with Dr. Joe. I'll, of course, obviously spotlight this interview as well. Dr. Joe Eastman, doctor, thank you very much. I appreciate the time as always.
Oh, I appreciate talking to you, Matt, and keep up the good work. Thank you.
Take care, my friend. Alrighty. We'll take a break. Come on back. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950.
All right, Matt, we're going to have to take you back in without music since the computer is going slow today. So I don't have anything to sing for you, though.
We need a... that computer is dying. I'm just going to... I'm no IT expert. I don't think that computer is going to make it too much longer. Thanks to Dr. Joe. I appreciate him coming to join us. That's the thing is it's... The scariest part of all is he's exactly right. There's just one variant away that just evades all vaccines and everything we've got. wiping out a much larger portion of the population for us to realize, well, maybe we shouldn't be trying to put in public sentiment. I get it. People like sports bars. People like amusement parks, movie theaters, and stuff like that. But it's hard to see rational people, intelligent people, adopting less than solid arguments to go where they want to go. That's the part that's difficult. By the way, we were talking earlier about the elevation of the hills there in Duluth. And Brett, you might be pretty close to 1,500. Raising one brow on Twitter, pointing out that the highest elevation in Minnesota, Eagle Mountain, just north of Grand Marais, is about 2,300 feet. Superior itself is 600 feet above sea level. So that's about a 1,700 foot. If it's 1,700 foot difference between the highest point in Minnesota and Lake Superior. So if you did, I don't know, could you train for a mountain climbing just by going to Duluth? Hiking from the lift bridge all the way to the top, up to the scenic drive that's up there, and back, you know, down, you might be able to. There's some of those stretches. You're definitely going to get a calf workout on that sucker. So, I mean, so maybe 1,500 is about right on that 1,200, 1,500 feet. So, yeah, there. Thank you very much, Raising One Brow. We'll take a break. Come on back. Farm subsidies. I'll tell you. Ooh, the exciting world of farm subsidies. We'll get to that in the next hour. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950.
Hour number two of the show on your Monday. Good to be with you.
952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Matt and Brett here. Brett, an update on this story, because people have been wondering about what exactly happened here. An 18-year-old St. Paul woman was drunk, had been arguing with her 17-year-old boyfriend when she allegedly put a gun to his head, fired a fatal shot as they spent the evening with friends in Chanhassen last week. Prosecutors in Carver County charged Vanessa Sanchez Lopez on Monday with two counts of second-degree murder in connection with the fatal shooting of Manuel B. Lurado, in the early morning hours of February 2nd. According to the criminal complaint, police began pursuing a speeding vehicle in Eden Prairie around 2:15 that morning. When the vehicle stopped at Fairview South Dale Hospital, police found Jurado in the front passenger seat with a close-range gunshot wound to the head. He was pronounced dead a short time later. According to the complaint, Carver County Sheriff's Office investigator learned a shooting had occurred inside the vehicle on the way to the 700 block of an address in Chanhassen. According to the criminal complaint, Sanchez Lopez picked up Jurado in the evening of February 1st to go to the movies. Afterwards, they picked up a 15-year-old in St. Paul and a 19-year-old in Matamidi before heading to the older teen's boyfriend's home in Chanhassen. The witnesses told investigators Sanchez Lopez and Jurado had been arguing that evening, and a firearm used in the shooting belonged to Jurado. The 15-year-old told police Jurado had let Sanchez Lopez handle the gun, but warned her not to shoot because it was loaded. Sanchez Lopez then allegedly put the gun to Jurado's head and pulled the trigger. The 19-year-old witness told investigators Sanchez Lopez reacted to the shooting by saying she didn't want to take Jurado to the hospital because she didn't want to go to prison, charges state. Well, if you didn't want to go to prison, you shouldn't have shot him. In an interview with investigators, Sanchez Lopez initially denied being in the vehicle when Jurado was shot before claiming she had been dancing around with the gun in her hand. The gun went off. So, yeah, you know, so she shoots the guy and then immediately starts lying about it. Yeah, because the only thing she cared about was herself. Sanchez Lopez later admitted to pointing the gun at Jurado, pulling the trigger, but she denied knowing the gun was loaded. She also denied they'd been arguing, which, once again, eyewitnesses testify that she did both of those things. She is an absolute horrible person here. The breath test given to Sanchez Lopez at the hospital in the morning of the shooting, 0.13. According to the complaint, deputies later recovered audio from the neighbor's house. Moments before the shooting, voice can be heard saying, "Ness, you killed him," charges state. Another voice is heard saying, "You shot him in the face." A fundraiser has been created to help out the victim and the family there. I want to say, and yes, I'm a little biased here, because in December, I got hit by an alleged drunk driver, and he broke my back and totaled my car. I was doing nothing wrong, and this happened. Here you have another case where this 18-year-old drunk, by legal limits, not drunk much, not nearly as much as the person that allegedly hit the alleged drunk that hit my car, but still drunk. if you are going to be in this state and you're going to argue to me about the dangers of marijuana, well, then you better be for barring alcohol, because I tell you what, alcohol takes a hell of a lot more lives and causes a heck of a lot more problems than marijuana ever has. Don't get me wrong. You can have some questions and thoughts about the what marijuana does, and is it really good to have it legal? But don't be this hypocrite talking about that's a bridge too far when it comes to dope. No, come on. We got an alcohol problem in this country. We have a serious freaking alcohol problem in this country. And as long as we just sit here and look at this almost daily carnage that's happening, I mean, I'm not sure on this. I don't want to necessarily say for sure, but there were two accidents involving snowmobiles this weekend. And the first thing I said is, was alcohol involved in either one of those? Because we've had a plethora of alcohol snowmobile accidents. And then we've had a plethora of alcohol ATV accidents. And we have a plethora of alcohol boat accidents. But I don't hear any of these people talking about the ill effects of marijuana and the dangers of people being high, driving or working or anything, ever say, well, and maybe we should be a lot harsher here on alcohol. We could do a lot to curtail this. Yes, there'd be some harsh penalties, but clearly at this point, what we're doing is not working. The fear of possibly getting pulled over is not a deterrent. Heck, these people are going out on the roads schnocker to the freaking gills in some cases. And it is unfortunate, but this is the case. And I mean, this person here, I mean, a selfish little jackass of a brat in Sanchez Lopez, who sits there and the entire time is basically, she's a horrible person, it sounds like. From everything in this story, she sounds like a horrible human being. And yet, you know, we kind of look at the alcohol and say, oh, that has nothing to do with this. Well, it doesn't help. It doesn't help. I was joking earlier about a woman getting a little drunk and throwing the chicken. Maybe we should be grateful it was a chicken. It wasn't a gun. It is, ugh. I have to admit, I've got zero tolerance. And Brett, I don't think it's that hard to understand why, from my perspective, I've got absolutely zero tolerance when it comes to the idea of you know, this constant, never ending stream of these, you know, this never ending stream of alcohol related problems.
No, it is unfortunately something that is not slowing down whatsoever, especially when you're talking about operating a motor vehicle while you're under the influence. Bad things are going to happen.
Yeah, and they just don't want to seem to do anything with it there. So 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. I'm going to change up stories here because there is the story out there in regards to the Minnesota flag. Now, have you seen, you know what the Minnesota state flag looks like, right, Brett?
It's one of those things. I saw what you're talking about where, like, I can picture the Minnesota flag in my head, but I can't really remember specifically what's on there. It's something that's, like, just kind of in your head, but right, not memorable. That's at least my take.
Let me paint the picture with the magic of radio. Hey! All right, so we've got a blue flag. In the center is a white circle. It's got a gold border around it. In that circle, Minnesota is on the bottom of the page there. There are various star formations ringing the circle next. On the top of the flag, there's three stars. In four different other locations, there's four stars. I'm sure that means something. I'm not sure what that case may be. There's a bunch of them in an inner circle there, a series of yellow dots. I'm going to guess that represents the counties. the amount of counties there. I can't count. I'm not going to count them all, but that's there. Then inside that ring of yellow dots is a blue circle, which at the top says 1858, which is the year Minnesota became a state. Looks like lady slippers. The flower, the state flower, is adorned around that. It says 1819, 1893. There, I'm guessing 1819 was when it was declared a territory, maybe. I'm not sure what 1893 is, you know, what the significance of 1893 is per se. Then inside that, and here's where we start to go into trouble. So nothing, I don't think anything so far is really outrageous. But then, yeah, go in the middle of that blue circle. There is an image, and it says Star of the North in French. I don't speak French, so, yeah. And inside is an image. It's a guy with a plow, what looks like a gun. not at the same time. He's not, like, hunting as he tills. He's got a gun leaning against a stump, and he's pushing a plow. In the distance is what's supposed to be, I'm guessing, a Native American with either a spear or a bow and arrow, and people have made the point that that is a smidge dated as far as imagery goes. So have I explained it well enough there, Brent?
Yeah, I got a good picture of it now, yes.
Yeah, and by the way, I should mention the farmland, they got water, they got some pine trees, sun in the background. It's not the worst looking flag. I mean, there are some atrocious looking flags. I'm going to just be honest with you. I mean, there's some real duds out there. But it's not the ugliest flag out there, but it's the same time. It does have some work it has to do. So people want to redo the flag and change it up. I am not against this for this reason, is because I don't think antiquated idea, you know, imagery of the, you know, white men driving Native Americans off their land is necessarily a solid image. But if I may, there are some other states that do have really spectacular state flags. Now, do you off the top of your head know of any state flags or that one that you like perchance, Brett?
No, I kind of have that whole image of my head of like what all state flags look like. They all kind of, I don't know, I'm not good at picturing what they look like from around the country, so no.
I will say this without a doubt in my mind. I love Minnesota. The best state flag is South Carolina. That state flag is gorgeous. It's blue. It's got a palmetto palm tree in the center, and up in the upper left corner is a crescent, which is not a moon per se. It's the guard that people used to carry on their chest to prevent their head from getting sliced off with a sword. But it does look like a moon. So it's this beautiful, gorgeous blue. And I've seen this because I've been down to South Carolina a lot because I got family that lives down there. It's this really very pretty flag. And it is a pretty stunning one how pretty it is. I will also bring up, I think Alaska has got a flag that's really nice. Dark blue with the Big Dipper and the North Star on it. Arizona's flag is quite nice. That's the one with the star where it's a blue bottom and then it's got, you know, rays of sunshine coming up on the top of it. New Mexico is a yellow flag with a simple, what I believe is a Native American symbol in the middle of it. Let's see. Colorado's got a good one. That's the blue, white, blue, and then the red C with the yellow dot in the center. That's actually a solid entry in there. Rhode Island's got a good one. The anchor, that's nice. You know, it's simplistic. You're not getting anything there. Maryland is not bad. That's that one that's really outrageous. I mean, that's got the orange and black checkered squares and then the red and white, you know, squares. And, yeah, it's kind of, you know, all over the place. Not bad. I think it's a little too busy. It's amazing how many states in the South kind of, even after we basically said you shouldn't have the Confederate flag in your state, you racist jackasses, you lost, still try to put the Confederate flag in there. Mississippi, I'm looking at you, Mississippi, Florida, Tennessee, Arkansas, Texas, I see you. You're not fooling anyone. Indianapolis, Indiana's got a good one. That's got blue and it's got a torch on it. So there are some good ones out there. But, it is interesting. I did read some of the comments on the story, which, it goes exactly where you'd think it would go in some cases there. Some people are putting suggestions. One, a can of Grain Belt beer alongside a photo of a White Castle slider. Done. I'm not against that. That's actually, that does, I think, capture a lot of Minnesota. Although, I think we can, it's, like I said, with the problems we have with alcohol consumption in the state, maybe not the best idea there. I'm not going to read some of the worst ones. You can get a sense like, how dare you try to cancel white culture? Minnesota's getting so low. Well, there was one guy who was arguing the first job of a conquering force is to take the old flag and destroy it and put the new flag up. So I guess this is Walz's legacy. I'm like, dude, man, wow. That is what you call a reach. It does sound like this is going to get done. It does sound like they're going to make some changes here. Yeah, I'm not against it because we're not talking about erasing history. We're just not going to have the altered, filtered through the whitest of white prisms, Minnesota history that we've basically leaned on for the last 100 years because it's really inconvenient to acknowledge the racist background of the state, which is primarily in the case of Minnesota, we drove off all the Native Americans. And frankly, after double crossing them and starving them, the white settlers drove them to have to go to extreme, extreme actions back in the 1860s. And then we used the argument of that to basically ship them off to the West. No, it's that there's nothing wrong with acknowledging the fact that our ancestors in the state did a lot of really bad, crappy things here. So maybe, just maybe, in an effort to make things better, we don't have a flag that has the image of white guys taking over the land to plow with Native Americans riding on a horse away. I don't disagree with that, not in the least bit. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. Let's take a break. Come on back. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950.
They can't make things worse for me. Sometimes I'd rather die. They can't.
AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. So last week, I spent a good chunk of last week talking about how concerned I am about where the Republicans are going. And that it does seem like we are at that breakpoint, that we're crossing that line to where the extremist far right is like, as I said, it's the jilted, deranged ex-boyfriend who's got to the point, it's like, well, if you're not going to love me the way I want you to love me, I'm going to make you love me. And there is this really ugly underside to all of this. And Brett, let's get ready. We're going to play this here. I want to play a clip for you. This is, and once again, this is upsetting for me because I am a Christian. Once again, disclaimer, you do or don't do whatever it is you do or don't want to do. I'm Christian. But this is, this is Lauren Boebert, and I know you're all like, what are you doing, Matt? Why are you? I'm going to play this because I want to call this out on a lot of different levels. But this is I think it's about a minute and 10 long clip. This is Lauren Boebert apparently speaking at a church. I'm presuming it's this weekend. So go ahead and play this clip.
God said that he was the provider. I know that Jesus said that we would be blessed. But I just don't know about this month. And Jesus is right there at the table with you. Sam, what kind of conversation is this? why are you talking like this and why are you sad? Jesus, don't you know? We're out of money. COVID's hit. They shut everything down. Joe Biden's president. We don't know what to do, Lord.
Oh, God. Yeah, that's... This is at a church, by the way. They're applauding at a church at this.
It's all right. We pray for our presidents. You know, it says, let his days be few and another take his office. That's why I filed articles of impeachment for Joe Biden. Unfortunately, he does have a really great insurance policy named Kamala Harris.
Now, all right. Thank you, Brett. Appreciated. First of all, that's at a church, and I get it. In I'm presuming this is in Colorado where she's from. There are some parts of that state which are far right, that they've thrown out pretty much everything in the Bible that has anything to do with Jesus, and it's this Trump Republican version of Jesus, and they've installed that. There is a secret code that these people, they try to do a secret code. It's not very secret. But I love it when stupid morons try to be clever. I'm going to be clever here. Watch what I do. And particularly, Boebert uses the phrase from Psalm 109:8, let his days be few and let another take his office. Now, she is very specifically not saying the very next line. And if I may, let me repeat, this is the biblical passage that Lauren Boebert is quoting. Psalm 109, passage 8, may his days be few, may another take his place of leadership. Let me actually read 109 from 6 to 15, okay? Because this is, you know, what Lauren Boebert's trying to be clever is she's basically saying this knowing the entire context of the passage she's quoting, and everyone who's sitting applauding knows the passage, yay! But she's smart enough to not say the whole thing. So, once again, religious disclaimer, you do or don't do whatever it is you do or don't want to do. I'm Christian, but I'm not here to basically convert anyone, okay? And plus the fact, this is not exactly the Bible verses that's going to get people lining up at churches. I can tell you that right now. This is, once again, Psalm 109, 6 to 15. And reminder, 8 is where she read. So, let me think. Appoint someone evil to oppose my enemy. Let an accuser stand at his right hand. When he is tried, let him be found guilty, and may his prayers condemn him. May his days be few. May another take his place of leadership. May his children be fatherless and his wife a widow. May his children be wandering beggars. May they be driven from their ruined homes. May a creditor seize all he has. May strangers plunder the fruits of his labor. May no one extend kindness to him or take pity on his fatherless children. Fatherless children. May his descendants be cut off, their names blotted out from the next generation. May the iniquity of his fathers be remembered before the Lord. May the sin of his mother be blotted out. May their sins remain before the Lord, and may he blot out their name from the earth. Lauren Boebert knows exactly what she is reading part of and what she is calling for as she sits there and coyly just tries to throw out just this thing is, let his days be few and let another take his office. She knows the very next line is, let his children be fatherless and his wife a widow. She is calling for, she's using biblical passage to call for the death of Joe Biden. And here's the part which is just, ugh. She knows it. She thinks she's being clever. She knows she's using this part. She knows the entire context of the clip that she is reading from. She knows exactly what she is calling for. And the crowd does too. When you hear this bunch of heretics in the audience listening to Lauren Boebert going, yay, they know the next line is, may his children be fatherless and life be a widow. And by the way, let's go to, that's 9. If you go to 12, may no one extend kindness to him and take pity on their fatherless children. It's clear that this is calling for the death of your enemy in biblical terms. And she tries to get away with it. And she does get away with it because, first of all, no one in the media has the guts to call these people out on their religious hypocrisy, which they should. Ta-da! You see, you can do that, people. I'm doing it. Lauren Boebert is a heretic. She is an absolute freaking heretic. But the crazy part is she's clearly calling by using biblical passage for the death of Joe Biden. Clearly calling for it. And this is not the first time that she's used this. She has used this in multiple times. As a matter of fact, Patriot Takes is where I got the original audio for this. She also quoted exactly, very specifically, 109, Psalm 109, passage 8. She very, very specifically edits it down that much. But when you read the whole thing, it's very clear. And it's not just calling for the death. It's this Republican fantasy of they're going to grovel and we're not going to give them anything. Oh, they're going to have everything taken away. Their names are going to be wiped from history. That is the modern Republican. All last week, I talked about this. This is what the modern Republican, they fantasize about this stuff. And this whole passage in Psalms 109 is exactly what it is. May no one extend kindness to him or take pity on their fatherless children. May his descendants be cut off and their names blotted out for the next generation. That is what they want. They want him dead. They want his family poor and groveling and no one's going to help them. And they want their legacy wiped out. That is who these people are. And Lauren Boebert thinks she's clever. She thinks she's getting something calling out, and no one is calling her out on this. And all it takes is, by the way, Lauren, you mentioned Psalm 109, number 8, you don't want to read number 9, which is, let his children be fatherless and his wife a widow, which is part of the context of the story you constantly quote in regards to Joe Biden. And have her sit there and go, or try to argue, I only care about 109.8. I don't know what's in the rest of that Bible in that passage. I just want to know 109.8. I don't condone the death of him. Well, but you are reading from a thing that calls for the death of the person. We have to call this crap out. Because listen to the crowd applaud her. And once again, those people know exactly what she's calling for, what passage she's referring to, what exactly she wants her followers to do. She's basically going to try, like I said, she's trying to be clever. But stupid people trying to be clever is ludicrous because you can kind of see through it. If you're going, it's bad enough that you're encouraging violence against the president of the United States. It's bad enough that you're doing it biblically, trying to find some religious, by basically parsing and trimming and editing down, trying to find some way to call for it in a passage which is clearly about calling for the death of someone and trying to act like you're an innocent victim. Don't quote the Bible unless you know the Bible. And you're trying to sit there and say, I'm only quoting this passage while ignoring the context of said passage. It's bad enough you're doing that. But then to hear all the people applaud in that house of Satan that she calls a church. You wonder why religion is losing people. And heck, I don't blame you. I don't blame anyone for walking out of a church and saying, I'm done with this. Because especially some of these faiths, they're not about helping out the poor or the needy. They're about pushing Republican talking points. And proof of that is having even Lauren Boebert come in and speak. I guarantee you there's far fewer churches that would ever allow a Democratic congressperson to come in and speak during the church service than there are the Republican ones. Because they like the political power sucking up to the far right gives them. but it doesn't bring in people in the seats. So as you listen to this, what I want you to hear is simply this. Lauren Boebert is using biblical passage to call for the death of Joe Biden. And the crowd applauds approvingly. That's not Jesus talking. That sure as heck is not Jesus talking. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. We'll take a break. Come on back. I'll get into farm subsidies when I do return. It is the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205 is the phone number. From the Minnesota Reformer, Christopher Ingram has an excellent breakdown on farm subsidies. And I posted this with this comment. I find it hilarious, and I do. I find it absolutely stunningly hilarious, the amount of people that protest socialism. That's protest socialism. They fervently rail against it, but who don't even see on the other side of their own damn coin that they are jamming variations of socialism in their pocket with a smile on their face. And if you dared stop that, these people who rail against socialism would cry about, "Why are you hurting me?" And nothing epitomizes that more than ag and corporate socialism, which we do a lot of in this country. We have a lot of socialism programs in this country geared towards the ag sector and for corporations. Now, I'm not going to talk about corporations, although I guess to a point I am, because a lot of these ag companies are massive corporations. But I just want to talk, you know, directly about the ag subsidies. I'm not against ag subsidies. But what I want is a bunch of whining, sniveling little jackasses that pocket this money to stop acting like they're somehow better than the rest of us, somehow more divine, so we don't ever need anybody's help. We pull ourselves up by our bootstraps. And they sit there and they're talking about how they're salt of the earth and wholesome good people, and we're not like you people who need all these corporate hangouts, and where is my farm check? You know, seriously. Shut up and just say, you know what? No, I can see, hey, I benefit from it on ag programs. I'm not going to besmirch anyone else who benefits from it in any other capacity. If the USDA subsidized subsidies that went to farmers in Marshall County alone, were distributed equally to the entire portion of the county in 2021, every man, woman, and child in Marshall County would have received a $6,000 check. I want to stop. Just stop. Once again, these are people who will sit there and scream, "Government's wasting money!" as they pocket massive amounts of money. And once again, that's not what happened in Marshall County. That's if all the subsidies that just went to farmers in Marshall County were distributed equally to everyone in Marshall County, that'd be $6,000 per individual in the county. Instead, $54 million in subsidy payments were divvied up amongst the county's roughly 1,000 farmers, with the largest receiving hundreds of thousands of dollars or more. Some of these farms, every member of the family, that it's a family farm, and we're talking family members, brothers and sisters who are in their 40s and 50s, and every one of them gets $300,000-$400,000. It's really, I mean, some of these guys, as they sit there and suck on the teat of federal taxpayer dollars with an appetite of the fat guy in Monty Python's Meaning of Life, it's only wafer thin. They basically just guzzle this stuff down. That's according to startling findings of a new data released by the Environmental Working Group, which shows Minnesota farmers received a total of $1.5 billion in USDA subsidies in 2021. $1.5 billion. Now, that figure includes $500 million in commodity payments, including direct payments made to farmers when market prices for certain commodities like soy and corn fall below given thresholds. Socialism. We'll prop up the price of the crops. We won't let, if it was capitalism, if it was pure capitalism, those prices drop out. It sucks to be you. So you sit there as you take this money and you say, I'm a capitalist. Well, if you were a capitalist, you probably would be out of business. So thank you. Thank you, urban taxpayers. We sure appreciate all the money you send our way. And once again, this isn't the state money, which once again, we've talked about over and over and over again, how the seven-county metro area basically subsidizes the rest of the state, that the rest of the state, especially a lot of Republican counties in the state of Minnesota, are welfare counties where they desperately need Twin Cities taxpayer dollars to meet their basic budgetary needs. And if they didn't have this, oh God, the quality of life in that county would dramatically decrease. That's state money. This is federal money on top of it. Federal dollars. So that's $500 million for basically propping up crop prices to prevent, you know, wealthy farmers from basically ever having to have a bad day. Another $500 million in crop insurance subsidies, which allows farmers to pay deeply discounted premiums on insurance policies that pay out when crop yields are low. Now, I don't have a real big problem with that one. You know, I have a little bit of problem with the, you know, especially for the people that are free market capitalism. I mean, remember, do you guys remember that conversation I had with the pig guy over Christmas a few years back? And he was talking about, so should we start farm subsidies? He's like, oh, no, no. He was Johnny. We need free markets and capitalism. Oh, okay, so we should stop paying the pork farmers? What are you talking about? That's money well invested. Ah, I see. When you get money, it's a good investment. When other people get minority, that's wasting my taxpayer dollars. You see, apples, oranges sort of thing. Yeah, I see how you do it. $300 million in payments compensating farmers who experience natural disasters like floods and fires. Obviously, money well spent. Tragedy happens. We should be there. Basic function of government. An additional $139 million in conservation payments incentivizing farmers to keep their land in a natural state. Now, when Republicans talk about cutting payments to ag industry, they don't ever talk about cutting the payments for commodities, you know, propping up the commodity price. They don't ever talk about cutting the amount of premium, you know, payments we're keeping paying to keep the premium discounted low. We're not talking about, you know, money going out to natural disasters, floods. It's all that 139 in, you know, talking about keeping land in a natural state. They want to get rid of all that money. That's wasting our taxpayer dollars. The rest of the money, and by the way, that's only 139 million of the 1.5 billion that went to Minnesota farmers alone. Wow. The USDA programs are heavily tilted towards producers of commodity crops like soy, wheat, and corn. The payments are awarded by acreage, which in practice means the largest, wealthiest farmers receive the most federal money. Like I said, and are the ones who bankroll all these right-wing politicians who talk about socialism is bad as long as it's not ag socialism. Ag socialism is great. In Minnesota, for instance, the top 10% of farmers capturing nearly two-thirds of all federal commodity payments made between 1995 and 2021, according to EWG's analysis. By contrast, 40% of Minnesota farmers, including many small family-operated farms and growers of products that are ineligible for subsidy, received no payments at all. So, once again, you want they love their socialism, but only for wealthy people. You see, 40% of the farmers don't get anything. And only 10% of the farmers get two-thirds of all the federal money. We need to rethink this, I think, dramatically. All told, government payments accounted for 20% of the total Minnesota farm income of 2021. The average farm brought in more than $100,000 total. Now, on this article, and I'll link to this a little bit later on, Ingram puts out maps which show where most of the farm subsidies go. Funny story. That's not Minneapolis. That's not Dakota County. That's not the Iron Range. They're relatively not much up there because there's not a lot of farms up there. But, in the Minnesota 7th District, in the Minnesota 1st District, in the Minnesota 6th District, there's a lot of welfare farmers out there, a whole bunch. And once again, I'll remind you, most of this money is the vast majority of it is going to the wealthiest farmers. And the same people, Fischbach, Emmer, and Finstead, who all sit there and rail against socialism, are all for socialism payments to wealthy people in the ag industry. Yeah, it's disgusting. Most of the USDA farm dollars flow to the western part of the state, home of the large commodity farms. Farm groups may say subsidies like these are necessary to bolster an industry where unpredictable factors like weather and natural disasters become highly variable year to year. Here's my problem, and this is just something I'm going to easily point out. The wealthiest farmers can weather those storms a hell of a lot better than the poor farmers can. They can. The wealthy farmers are basically, we're paying money to the wealthy farmers to that when the poor farmers, that 40% that don't get anything, their farm gets put under because of natural disaster. The big farmer can come in, buy out the farm, and then make that farmer work their former land for them as a punch clock employee. So that's kind of what we're doing here. Now, farm subsidies per capita, I think that here's the part which gets crazy. I believe this is for the entire county. So that if you took the farm payments that went into each one of these counties, that the county itself, if everyone in the county got a check for the farm subsidies that went into that county, everyone would get a certain amount of money. There are pretty much almost all the counties on the very western side of the state, from the very northwestern part of the state, almost all the way down, are looking at somewhere in the area of $2,000 to $7,500 per person in that county if that money was just spread across equally. Instead, you're paying for some wealthy farmer to put in a third pool on their property while everyone else basically has to keep working for the man. Mm-hmm. See, it's they love their socialism. The problem is that it's socialism by greed. It's basically they're using programs which are should be out there for the poor farmer, for everyone. Everyone should get a cut of this. And what they're doing is they're saying, no, we're just going to make sure the wealthy people get a cut of this. Oh, by the way, wealthy people, remember that when it comes to election time. I think we call their bluff because, okay, once again, I want to reiterate, I actually think farm subsidies are not that bad of a deal. I agree with them on some levels. But God, would it be hilarious to watch Michelle Fischbach and Tom Emmer and Brad Finstead, who are all screaming, socialism is wrong, scream hat in hand, what are you guys talking about stopping these payments to these farmers? These are hardworking farmers. Now, ignore the 40% of poorest farmers that don't get anything, but think about the millionaire farmer. They're barely getting by. Oh, God, it would be delicious to listen to those guys panic. It would. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. More on this when I come on back. It's the Matt McNeil Show on AM 950. And once again, I do want to reiterate, there are farm subsidies I get, and I understand that. I think there is a value in helping to offset when corporate forces, especially foreign countries too, you know, collapse a market. I get that. But most of the damage that's been done to the ag markets has been done specifically by these large farms. And large dairy producers who have gone out there and basically done everything in their power. They'll take a little less loss just to drive people out of business, and they've done it very efficiently. Now, they'll all come on back and they'll say, but Matt, we're just trying to feed America. No, you're not actually. The lion's share of USDA subsidy dollars go to commodity crops that aren't necessarily destined for human consumption. Most of the corn in the U.S., for instance, is grown for livestock feed or for ethanol, with the addition sent overseas. So we're subsidizing crops that aren't going to feed Chinese kids. And the Republicans love this, by the way. This is all the Republicans love this socialism. Economists have long criticized the farm subsidy program for distorting food prices, incentivizing overproduction, and diverting federal resources to wealthy landowners. Some have found that corn subsidies, for instance, have led to a glut of unnecessary processed products like high fructose corn syrup, contributing to the obesity epidemic. Farmers today, on balance, are contributing well. But you see, the mentality is I'm just selling a corn a cob. Corn on the cob that you have on the 4th of July at your barbecue table. No, you're not. You're not selling that. You're selling corn for ethanol. You're selling for this. They create this image of wholesome food production, and the reality is they're not doing that. The vast majority of them are not doing it. The vast majority of them are not that small-time farmer who they put into the ads to make it look like, Cletus there, who barely is getting by, is getting a few bucks from the federal government. Cletus doesn't get any money. This all goes to Johnny Wealthy Farmer Dude. That's who gets all the money. That's who gets it. Farmers today, on balance, are considered wealthier than other Americans. The 2018 congressional budget found that about 97% of farm households, which constitute about 2% of the U.S. population, were wealthier than the U.S. median household. Now, that being said, that farm income was about 52% higher than the typical U.S. household. That is actually goes in waves. There have been times where that number has been dramatically lower and it's gone higher. So it's one thing to look at it. Now, the problem is that you've got a situation where... And by the way, if I could, quick little side note, can you find it hilarious? It's like, you wealthy fat cats in the metro area, dude, you're 97% of all farm households do better than everyone else. You're the wealthy fat cats out there in your rural homes. Ugh. The majority of farm payments flow to the richest farms, according to the CBO 2014. That group included those who made more than $350,000 in annual sales. But once again, Republicans love socialism when it's helping out that wealthy farmer. It's crony capitalism. They talk about this. It's an excellent article, once again, from Christopher Ingram over at the Minnesota Reformer, which if you're not reading that on a daily basis, you're just wrong. I would love, in direct line to Christopher Ingram, I would love to see a follow-up story on this. Could you tell us how many politicians serving in St. Paul got farm subsidies? And I would love to know that so that when they go on out there and talk about taxpayer dollars are too high or keep your nose out of our business, we can look at them and say, did you take $100,000 in farm subsidies? Well, that was good investment. Ah, I see. I see. You're a massive hypocrite. That's all that is. Read the article. It's worth the time. Native Roots Radio, I Am Awake. That's up in the 6. You stick around for that. Have a good one. We are back on a Tuesday. Until then, see ya.